Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. It's good to pseudo see you tonight. I'm wearing my old man's talking hat. My wife thought she threw this thing out, but it's like an old guy that runs a garage, but like it, out of his own garage, right? Like he can't work anywhere legitimate. That's the type of hat I have. If I've painted a picture for you.
I hope I can see that in the hat.
Is that distinct enough?
Are you saying your hat is like the garage, or you are like a guy who works out of his garage?
No, see, here's the deal. I suppose the thing that I find this hat appealing would otherwise indict me as well under that same example. Okay. You can make proper assumptions about me and how I run my life based upon the type of hat I chose. All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. Hey, I wanted to talk a little bit more. We've talked about this in the past, but it seems like a relevant thing to discuss with some of those beheadings that went on with Christians, the Coptic Christians. And there is a broad spectrum of Christianity that has the right answer to this. Like, what is the right response? You have the kill them all and let God sort them out type of folk. Evil is evil. It's our job to combat. And then on the other side, you have pray and let the cards be what they may. And so, like, that's a pretty wide gamut. And there's a lot of implication not only to this circumstance, but, like, historically how people have reacted. And I want to talk through that a little bit and see if we can try to understand, like, where are those coming from? Where do we feel like we have some foundations? I'll be honest with you. I was talking about this with my wife before I came to the show tonight. And the truth is I don't know that I'm sure. I have a pretty strong inkling in one direction. And there's probably just part of me that's a little afraid that that's the right answer, and it's just a big right answer. So anyway, I want to talk through that just a little bit. Also, there was an interesting. There's been tons of articles about 50 Shades of Grey and stuff. I don't really want to talk about the movie or the book. To be honest with you, I think there's been 10,000 articles and 10 of those people read the book. Everyone else just got kind of excited about other things that other people said, either because ooh, there's nudity. Oh crap, there's nudity. So anyway, I don't really want to talk about all that, but there was a one article that was talking about industrialized sex, and I thought it was just an interesting way of thinking about how to understand sexual relationships. And so I'll read to you what it is I'm talking about, and then I don't know, just see how it hits you, see if it rings right, and if it changes kind of how we have conversations about what sex is, how it works inside of relationships and that kind of thing. Also, we have advice on Dear Life from the Path. Mike, have you taken a spot of these things? Are they any good?
Yeah, there's a couple heavy ones in there. There's one where a husband likes to send texts, and if his wife does not answer immediately, he gets kind of mean. He's like, why don't you have a cell phone? You ain't even going to text me back. Blah, blah, blah.
Shoot.
Yeah. So
shoot. Okay.
We have a good characterization of this man here, so it ought to be excellent.
Okay. I'm ready for that. Serious. Also, you know, one of the things that I've been wondering, actually, from some things that have come up today, is like, what does it mean to lead like Jesus? And here's the deal. I'm well aware that there's like a million books out there by corporate types that are trying to sell you on your corporate job and how Jesus leads. But I want to take him outside of a specific corporate box and just ask broadly, like, what are the characteristics of Jesus as a leader, and how does that influence how we deal with things, either when things are going well, when things are going poorly, when people are acting foolishly, when you're coming upon, you know, success and the things that you want, like how does Jesus the leader act, and reasonably, not like I want to sell books attachment, but like reasonably, how should that influence what we do in our day to day lives, from families, from work, from whatever. Okay, so and what I asked kind of the guys before the show started was, I'm just looking for things that kind of stood out to you, because what's going to be interesting is that people will see different aspects of Jesus, of the way Jesus leads, depending on their personality, right? You'll see one guy that makes it sound like Jesus hugs everybody and gives them a flower on casual Friday, and then the other guy who's got Jesus like, get behind me, Satan, and throwing people out. So like, It'd just be interesting to kind of see what everybody comes with it. So we're going to talk about that. Also, before we get any further, a quick shout out to our sponsors, Bob Eisenlauer with the Eisenlauer team. Go to EisenlauerTeam.com if you're looking to buy or sell a house, hopefully both. Bob can help with that, and he's a great friend of the show, an awesome realtor, and just an all-around good guy to be a part of, and so is his team. John's great to deal with, and his whole team is just excellent. So he comes highly recommended from Life from the Path. Go to EisenlauerTeam.com and get a hold of Bob. And it also got like house listings and stuff on there, so even if you just want to peruse around and see what's on the market, he can help you out with that. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital, that's WestfieldVetHospital.com. You can set up your appointments online, which means if you're sitting right now in your boxy shorts and you know that you got to get that cat in, now might be the time to do it. Just go to WestfieldVetHospital.com, set up that appointment, get that put on the calendar, and get the animal in, get them taken care of. It's still classified as a new year. It could still be a new you, and you can do what you know is correct for your animals. Get them the shots. Get them the right food. Here's the deal. Animals deteriorate just like people, right? And so you notice the dog's like 8 years old.
What?
Here's the deal. People treat
Hello, Grandpa. You look to be deteriorating.
People treat the dog like it lives forever in a normal state and then just keels over one day and dies, right? You don't contemplate the fact that, hey, it's 7 years old, not two. We should feed it differently. It should be eating different things. We should be giving it different things. We may have to care. It's limping around, for heaven's sakes. We should give him some medicine, things of this nature. So now's the time to react to that, make the right choices. Go to WestfieldVetHospital.com. Again, that's where I take my pets. They've always done an awesome job with our animals. We have a limping dog at the moment, and they got to straighten it out. So
I've got a couple animals heading that way this week, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we came across there was a cat that come up to the in-laws' house, you know, and my wife and I were dropping off the kids because we're going to go out on a date. And I said, great. So we drop off the kids, and this cat shows up, and it appears to have one eye. And it's meowing, looking for food, right? And I said, oh, man, I hope my wife does not see this cat, right? And so
there goes the date.
So she sees him, and we leave. I convince her, we're going to go out. We go have some dinner somewhere, and we get done with dinner. I said, well, what should we do? It's still kind of early. She goes, we should go pick up that cat. I said, no, we don't want to do that. And she looked at me square in the face and said, I love him.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And I said, well, I guess we're going to pick up a cat then. And so we go pick up this mange artist. And this cat, I mean, can't be but 6 weeks old, has one eye missing. So I've told. And then it seemed to be in discussion, like there might actually be an eye back there, but it was an infection, you know. And I thought, here's the deal. If I've been roped into getting this one-eyed cat and it turns out to have two eyes, I'm going to be very upset.
Oh,
like I might re-kick it back out of the house. You know, I was willing to take it in based on the one-eye principle. But, long story short, I come looking at this thing in today. The kids have made this massive bed for it, you know, with the blankets off their own bed in this box. And, you know, I go into the bathroom to check on this thing, and it's licking a wound. And I'm like, oh, no, it has a wound. And I said, wife, there's a wound. Come look at it. And she goes, oh, it's infected. The cat has been bitten by some animal. I'm like, oh, no. And then she starts squeezing it, and pus starts coming out.
Oh, man.
She goes, we got to get it all out. And I said, no. You and Westfield can get all this stuff out. This does not seem like a place for me, you know. But I hung through it. She used my beard trimmers to cut the hair back so we could see the scab correctly. Ooh. And I thought, man, I don't know what the Lord's done to me. You know, I said, you need to. In fact, I offered that up. I said, when you take that cat into Westfield, can you take the clippers with you and get him disinfected, however you all do it there, so I can have my beard trimmers back. Either way, we're going to use their services, and I'm pretty excited to see what they're going to do.
Oh, man.
They exist in the world to handle things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. When you see a cat with one eye and can't decide whether there's an actual eye in there or not, it's time to take them in.
You have a tender-hearted wife.
Yeah, she's excellent with animals. That's the truth. Although, Her Excellency drives a lot of animals to our place. We don't ever get a legit animal. You'd always get someone that's got some. The first dog we ever got, in fact, she saw him on Channel 13 News, right? They take this dog in from the Animal Lifeline or whatever, and he's on there like, oh, he's totally adoptable. He's a nice dog. He sees his own reflection in the camera and, like, goes ape crazy. starts barking and tearing the place up.
And your wife, we've got to have him.
The wife goes, that's a dog for us. Go, we go pick him up. Next day, he's at our place.
Oh, no.
That dog was crazy. He used to take food and hide it behind doors. Like, he'd take a Bundt cake off the counter, open the door, and then prop it up between the door and the wall, and then, like, shut the door like nothing had happened. I'd find food in the couch all over the place. He tried to drag a deer carcass in one time.
No, he did not try. He succeeded.
Yeah.
I don't know how the door got open, but it was wide open when we come home from work. And this dog has been out and found like a It had to have been like a three-month-old deer carcass.
Oh.
Like the bones and all the stuff is kind of still sinewed together a little bit. And he is dragging it from – it's got to be like a quarter mile out. And it's sitting in the kitchen.
Oh, no.
He's got it drug in through like the mudroom, sitting on the kitchen floor with his deer carcass. And then when he comes in, he's got this biggest grin on his face.
Look what I did.
You'll never guess what happened.
And brought you a present.
When we took it outside, like the look and disappointment in his eyes could not be overcome.
It was heartbreaking. Like, I mean, like, he had worked so hard for this thing. And I said, you're not keeping this in the house. And you take it outside, and he just looks, I mean, broken. Like, his insides had just fallen apart, and there was nothing left for morale. Anyway, take your dog and catch him in the field. I don't know if they could fix the deer carcass problem, but they could certainly get that dog up and healthy.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right. All right, here we go. So here's what I came across. I was reading this article. It was on the Gospel Coalition by Joe Carter. And it was talking about the industrialized view of sex. And it comes out of kind of the 50 Shades of Grey book and film stuff. But, like, here's one of the things he said about it that I thought was really interesting. Some people will claim that there's something valuable to be gained by having multiple sexual partners before settling down for lifelong monogamy. These misguided souls completely miss the point. Sex is not a technique to be mastered, but a means of communicating. Sexual intercourse is a nonverbal expression of profound commitment, openness, and trust. Having multiple sexual partners as a means of preparing for marriage is like mastering the art of lying in order to become a paragon of honesty. And so I really thought that, like, there's something very strong about talking about sex is not a technique, right? Like, how can I do it better? How can I get it to feel better, or work longer, or whatever it is they sell pills in business for you to spice up your life? So if it's not a technique to be mastered, but a means of communicating, it very much does change the way that I think we approach, like, trying to perfect an event as opposed to trying to embrace what we are actually communicating when we are having sex. And the truth is, though, like, here's where I think he's gotten this not quite right. Is that for some people it is a technique to be mastered. Like, you can say it's not a technique to be mastered, but, like, I think the right thing to say is that a healthy view of sex is to understand it as a means of communicating and understand what exactly you are communicating through it, versus looking at it simply as a technique, something that you can should look to improve on, be the very best at, and then it will be the best it can be. That seems not to catch it in its entirety what it's designed to be. So yeah. Anyway, that stuck out to me.
I feel like that. I mean, it's almost on the same level as like the classic faith and works conversation. You know, works on its own is really nothing impressive, right? And like it'd be like a guy saying, "Look, I'm really good at making people think that I love them," you know, without actually loving them. But I'm really good at making people think that I love them, right? And so, like, on one end, it feels honest, and on the other end, it's coming from a bucket of lies. And like you know, the way that he's bound it is pretty much the same way, you know, like without having it coming from an honest place. And being, you know, what it was designed to be for, it really is just taking up time with a fleeting compliment that really had no basis of truth.
Yeah.
I think the whole what I'm looking for, people are just so obsessed with, you know, technique or that's what you were mentioning, you know, the technique and how you do the process of it. And I'm thinking, well, if you take the godly approach, let's say you're a person of God, and you go in this, and you get married, and you're both virgins. I mean, they're really, I don't know what the technique discussion really isn't there. I mean, it's like there's no, like, well, you do it differently than that person, or I mean, there's no comparing, there's no awkward. I mean, it's awkward anyway in the beginning, but I mean, it's just a. I don't know. I'm trying to.
You're
not
always
getting
the best.
As well. As, good
yeah,
thing
that's
radio.
Right. You are the best. Adam and Eve figured it out. You got one of these. I got one of those.
Yeah. I mean,
you think? Yeah.
It kind of works.
Let's communicate.
Eve's not like, no, that just doesn't work.
I don't
for
think
me
that.
Because,
well, it does. Yeah, it does go. Okay. This is great.
it's just like I think there is. I mean, there's reasonable desire to say, I want it to be the best experience possible for everyone involved. I get that, right? But, like,
sure.
Even the process of exploring that type of thing is a means of positively communicating with people that you're involved with, mm-hmm. as opposed to, like, you know, thinking that whoever you're with is looking to say that they don't love me unless sex is whiz bang. I mean, like, you're just probably thinking of it wrong. And frankly, it just approaches the context differently. So anyway, I just, you know, maybe there's not a lot to digest there. I just thought it was an interesting way of trying to make sure that when we're looking at it, like, if we define it only as a technique, then, like, the field is a lot more open. But if you recognize what you're communicating with it and, like, and the question whether you're lying or not, even within the action, is an interesting thought. But, it's just something I think to keep a handle on, even as married folks, is to recognize that, like, it is an expression of something. And you are communicating something, even when everyone's tired and it's short, or even when, you know, you haven't had time for it in 3 months. Like, they're just, you're still communicating with people in that action. And maybe be cognizant of that and treat that with the care that you would with other communications, how you talk to people, the way in which you approach things. You can't have a fruitful discussion if you're the only guy talking, things of this nature. Like, I think there's probably a lot of pretty good examples to recognize. Like, if you want a healthy sex life, if you look at that as a form of communication and understand the needs that exist when people talk and want to come together on a certain thing and see sex that same way, that feels like a very positive thing. Like, you can come out with, making sure things head the direction that they should, and you get the most out of the experience.
Yeah, well, and I think probably most of the, how we got to where we are, or how that comes to be, is it's almost out of sheer laziness and not wanting to invest in that type of communication, right? Like it's easier to, it's easier to go to McDonald's than it is to make stuff at your place. You know what I'm saying? You got to go to the store, you got to prepare it, you got to get the stuff ready.
Yeah.
And like, in the long run, the stuff you made at home is better for you. but it is really easy just to walk up and take something. And and then have it, and it was quick. There was no investment in your time. The guy basically worked for you, and you told him what to do. He propped it up, and then it was gone. And so it could be very much like the fast food satiated mentality. I just want it over with. I want it done. I want to be satisfied, and then I want to get out and then move on with the rest of my day. And really, what you lost was a large amount of communication and maybe a more meaningful investment of your time.
I heard it described in a way that was really compelling to me, and it really stuck with me in terms of sexuality as a form of connection, and that ultimately that's what's going on, is that people are satisfying their desire to connect between each other. And with that kind of a backdrop, then we start looking at all these different forms of sexuality that are part of modern society that are really devoid of connection, involving the internet or involving going off to a seedy place, but wherein which no human connection is actually being developed or taking place. And instead, it's some of the loneliest places on earth are these places that would otherwise be thought of as very sexual.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you could have someone who's completely celibate, but yet they connect well with people. And so, looking at it more from a different type of perspective, now they're oozing with sexuality, even though it's not just dripping lust. Instead, it's they're someone who connects well with people and looks at the way in which they connect with people in a way of, all right, how am I helping out these people? How am I satisfying needs that need to be met, not just for lust, but like actual human needs instead. So I prefer this other paradigm of looking at sexuality in terms of a connection. So,
yeah. So
I found it kind of fascinating. If I could just for a second, yeah.
No,
I'm done.
No, I'm sorry, Dad. Go ahead.
The whole outcry against the 50 Shades of Grey. Now, I haven't read the book. I have not seen the movie. Have no intention. But I've seen a lot of people just really, it's terrible. Don't see it. Blah blah blah. And I think, well, are we missing the fact that you don't have to go see? I mean, it's all over computer screens. I mean, it's like it's already there. It's not like no one's ever heard of this stuff before. I understand it's abusive and just degrading. But I think, isn't that already out there? I mean, shouldn't we be saying that anyway? I mean,
it's you know, it's funny because it's exactly like, I don't know. It's more like the God's people's reaction. Like, and we talked a little bit about this last week, right? Like, it's a rules versus relationship. Is it something that you prefer, I don't know, to have not to roll across your TV and think that what you're anybody who's involved in this kind of practice is wrong? Yeah, they don't know Jesus. You know, you want to talk to a guy about that kind of stuff? Or, I mean, tell me it's not an outcry of the void in their life that they're trying to fill with something different. Some people use alcohol or drugs or lying or greed, and these guys use, whips and deviant behavior. I mean, you're looking at the exact same problem. And it's funny that, like, You know, and it's been my Facebook feed for 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
It's been that. And I'm like, you know, it doesn't matter how many articles you post, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get it. You think this is terrible. Well, you know, the Lord thinks that the guy behind it needs him. And so let's just start there, you know?
Yeah, there must have been a fire sale on high horses because there were a lot of them on the net this week. it's just weird. Like, to Dan's point, right? Like, it's weird that we're opportunists.
Yeah.
And ineffective. Ineffective opportunists, right? The opportunity is when someone's struggling in their personal life, right? Our opportunity is not a broad scale war over the internet. It's just not. I know what we think. Like, we're going to channel and horse this thing into doing the Lord's work. And it's not that it can't be done, but like.
Well, all of a sudden we're against it. Why weren't we a year ago or 3 years ago or 10 years ago or.
Now that it's come up, I protest.
Yeah.
There's just a bit of disingenuousness about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm upset because it came across my desk. And then I'm not really upset about it anymore. Like, I didn't really pursue it to see if I should be upset about it. Which, to be honest with you, I go back and forth on this, but like, I really don't want to listen to a bunch of people who've not seen or read the books talk about it. Like, I'm just not interested in it. I don't need to see it. I don't need to see it. I know enough about it to know that I don't need to see it. There you go. I'm done with that, right? But I don't need to go rent a high horse and share why I don't need to get see it with somebody else. Like, I can't speak intelligently about it.
Yeah.
I can only take someone else's broad overview, generally twisted to make sure they get their point across, and then share that. And, like, I'm not sure I find that all that fruitful that I can speak into someone else's life with someone else's words who also didn't see it. So it's just not – you're just not moving the needle is all. And, like, I'm certainly not making the case that you need to go check it out for yourself. I'm telling you that from the very basic things I know, I don't need to take it in. But – I'm not sure that the thing that we feel like is winning the internet is not winning the internet. It's not really doing anything.
No.
And we need to stop doing that because we look silly.
Could be the Illuminati.
It could be the Illuminati.
Probably is.
All right. Another thing that I ran across. Hold on a second. Where was this at? Nope. Gone completely. Oh, yeah. Okay. I wanted to talk about the beheadings. So this is weird. Because it feels like it should be doing more. And I'm not like a mainstream media sucks type of guy, but like it's weird how our consciousness has been dulled to horrific things like that. It's not that you don't feel it, right? But like when I read about that, there was nothing that went, oh, I can't believe that happened.
It's like your first school shooting. You couldn't sleep for 3 days.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, another school shooting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I don't know that you know, you're necessarily called to, you know, sit in a corner for 8 days. But, like, I don't know. I just feel like I've been digesting it, right? I don't know any of those guys, but they were brothers of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And for doing the exact same things I do, they're dead. And I'm not. And so I think my question then is like, what is the right reaction? And like I said, I know that we've kind of had this conversation before, but it seems appropriate to discuss continually, which is what is the right personal reaction? And then what is the right group reaction? What is the right government reaction? And are those the same things? Like what do you do in the face of Satan? What's the Jesus answer?
I think if I were there, I'd be reading Revelation a lot because that was written in the context of a similar thing, Christians being put to death. You know, you stand firm, you overcome, you go to your death if so needed. You know, if you're called to die, you will die. I've often thought of myself, if I were there and I was the guy in the orange suit marching down the beach and they're ready to cut my head off, do I fight it? I was like, I don't think I do. I think I just say, I think that's already been done. You know, the death sentence has been given. I'm going to sit here and take it. You're going to be in some major prayer, you know.
Yeah.
Here I come, Jesus, you know. But that's not your question. So I've just been praying a lot that they remain strong, that the church tends to grow in times of persecution, that the gospel spreads through this time. You know, I, there might have been a time I would have been the guy who says, well, nuke it all. Nuke them all. Yeah. It's like, wait, we're also nuking our brothers.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the answer.
Do you think items like this, and this is a little bit off the conversation, I guess, but like, do you think items like this bring about some of the changes in a democratic society, right? It's like when we look at a free society like our own, or governments that were based on the decisions of the people, and they say, you know, freedom for all, and then people have taken that freedom and used it to destroy others. Do you think that moves the needle in a democratic society that looks at it and goes, you know, maybe not freedom to everybody for everything. Maybe this, you know, maybe our mindset on, you know, letting everybody just do whatever the heck they want is, maybe that was a mistake. Like, historically, does it do that? Do actions of like, and maybe not this, just this specific instance, right? But like, when people take their freedoms and use it to do horrific things, does it change the perspective on the freedoms that you allow people to have?
I don't know. I don't know if that's true historically. Like, I think, I mean, you've asked similar questions have been asked about, you know, burning the flag, you know, like things you consider to be offensive, and whether our free speech or covers that type of thing. And generally, we've fallen on with certain level of restriction on things like that should be permitted versus not permitted in the name of freedom.
I mean, I frankly, when I heard this story, I thought, you know, I don't know if it had to happen this way, right? But like, they're gonna cross a line. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's only so much that people will stomach of your way of living before they'll say that's it. Even the most war torn guy who says, look, we don't promote violence for anything. We will not fight back regardless of these actions until they got your grandpa, until they pick up your dad, you know, until it's your sister.
And that's what I'm asking. Like, is that appropriate? Is that really our line? Or is there a line? Is it like, to what level of do you defend yourself, right? Because like, if it's too late by the time they're marching you down the way, do you flee if you can before the trial? Do you punch the guy in the testicles and make a break for like, well, what's the right level of a follower who's frankly prepared to die, knows that it's very possible. The Bible is clear that it happens. At what point is it someone's to intercede and say they're just killing people randomly?
Well, I mean, but look, I mean, there's biblical examples of, you know, God-fearing men that bailed when they were about to get captured, you know, or split because the rising was too bad. Or when people were trying to lay hands on Jesus and he just kind of dissolved through the crowd and went elsewhere, right? Like, I mean, it can't, the answer can't be, you know, you take the comeuppance because comeuppance are coming solely based on the fact that they're coming to get you.
Well, I know that's a bad example, right? Like, I suppose only because his time hadn't come, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. And he obviously knew that, right?
But
yeah.
I don't know my time.
Yeah.
And so, like, you just assume every time someone's after you, it's your time.
This is it.
So I was thinking about that today, and I thought, like, save John, and not for lack of attempt, that all the disciples died.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, all of them died. Not one of them was able to flee successfully, or do we have a record that they attempted to? Now, although I think there are, like, there are biblical examples of saying, hey, man, they're after me. I'm going to go somewhere else. And they do that. Mm-hmm. So is it just like you're allowed to be squirmy until they finally get you and then you resign? And you say, well, okay, they got me.
Guess they got me. Yeah. I mean, John the Baptist. I mean, Jesus is the ministry is growing. He had the power to do what he was the Son of God. He could have gone in there and said, no, wait a minute, John prepared the way. I'm going to break him out of jail. He allowed John to be beheaded. I mean, excuse me. Sometimes that just comes with the package of being a believer.
I mean, but you didn't see David hit the ground and go, get me, you know. He ran. He took to the hills. You know what I'm saying? Like, he escaped. And so, like, maybe it's not a black and white blind that you can draw, you know?
I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out, though. Like, is the call to say, hey, man, we got to do something. Send in the bombers. Is that the right reaction? Because, like,
Well, here's the thing.
You're saying you're killing people, and we're going to solve this problem by killing people.
By killing you.
They don't sniff right.
See, this is where you have these blurred lines of, okay, we're talking as brothers in Christ or as the nation of America. What does the nation of America have vested in a bunch of Christians in Egypt, you know, or Syria?
Can you do both as a Christian man living in America? Can you go, look, I wish America would bomb them.
Right.
But I wish, you know.
we had this kind of similar discussion on the kind of the immigration topic, right? Like, how can our national conscience be different than my personal conscience? How can we be like, well, as an entity, we're allowed to do X, Y, Z. Like, I'll take a man into my home, but you certainly can't let him pour across the border. Like, it's the thought process that I think I need help thinking through that.
Yeah.
I need help thinking through the freedom in our society puts us in a bit of a conundrum. With the paradigm through which to think. I don't know that the decisions are actually all that difficult, but like if you understand, like if you're promoting what you believe personally on a national scale, there are significant implications to that. Take the United States involvement out of it. Egypt is pissed.
Yeah.
Right? Like a bunch of guys got beheaded for looking for work. And so like they sent in the bombers. If I'm the president, if I'm the leader of Egypt, do I say yeah? If I love Jesus, do I say send them in? I feel like my reaction is no, but I feel there's a part of me that holds on to the fact that like that feels foolishness.
If you're like civil government, you know, you're the leader of the government and they're assaulting your people, then you protect your people. You know, you go after them. You could take out the terrorists. As a Christian, I have a hard time saying we're going to get them because they killed my brother.
So how can those things be different? How can I set a role that says I'm the leader of Egypt? I will do this thing. Or should I just not have accepted the role of leader of Egypt? Like, well, is that the deal?
I mean, you got to protect, you know, David killed Goliath to protect his people.
Joshua and the Israelites, I mean, wiped out nations on the way to the promised land.
I mean, sometimes things happen for the protection of
wait.
The people.
You said David killed Goliath for the protection of the people?
But I mean, they were going to become slaves. Whoever won was going to become slaves of the other was the agreement.
Well, he did it because Goliath was blaspheming against his God, didn't he?
Sure. I mean,
that was what David cited.
Yeah, right.
Against him.
But I mean, the war in general was not for that.
Well, David didn't start the war.
Right.
Yeah, but there was a bunch of other people that knew who God that were God's people fighting in that war.
Yeah, but he got involved because God's reputation was being slandered. Mm-hmm.
And his whole family were going to become slaves of these godless people.
Maybe the David and Goliath was not a solid example.
Work with
okay. Moving on.
Let's smile and nod.
Let's come together on this thing.
All right.
So do I reject ever running for president of Egypt because I simply can't uphold the basic tenets of what they would expect a leader to do if my Christian reaction would be, don't send in the bombers.
If your Christian reaction is correct.
That's what I'm asking.
Well, I can't answer that for you. Yeah. I feel like you can't do well. There's not a black and white line there. Like, there's time when God said, you guys are going to war. My people are going to war. You're doing this thing. And there's times when he said, you're not.
As a leader, I wouldn't have any problem sending in the troops. If they're attacking us and beheading our people and causing havoc, I'd be like, I've got to protect the citizens. I mean, they're crucifying children. I mean, it's not like they're not going after soldiers. They're going after citizens who are just out there doing life. It's like, I've got to protect my people. Whether you're a police officer or a soldier, sometimes you step in and protect innocent people.
Buva, Herrick? Compelling.
Yeah, I've been sitting here and I want to comment on it, but I honestly don't know. I don't, because...
we comment anyway.
Well, right. That's gotten me in many, many situations.
We're
many
paying
bouts
for the time, Bova. feel free to pontificate.
Well, that's gotten me in many bouts of trouble with you guys. Is me just walking into something not knowing. From my first glance perspective, I mean, obviously you've got the whole, you know, you're supposed to treat everybody with, you know, the love of God. I mean, that's expected. Everyone you love on, that's if it's God's child, you love on that person. That is straight up how it goes, right? But at the same point in time, you guys are right. There's plenty of Old Testament examples of God saying, you are to destroy all of them. You will go and kill every single one of them. I mean, certain situations where if they didn't kill all of them, if they didn't kill every single person and then all of their livestock, and if they took any of the things, God was furious with them. And that's where I'm trying to figure out where my line is, because, you know, I don't know how I would take that whole concept of do I feel like God is calling me to take care of these people because they are slaughtering innocent people, Or do I feel like God is calling me to love on them no matter what as my enemies because they are children of his? They are misguided and they are running away from him and they do not believe in him or have any relationship with him, but they are still his people. They're still his children. So how can I, knowing that God has called me to love my enemies, knowing that God has called me to love my neighbors, which is everyone, how can I take that as it is okay to retaliate and kill them?
I don't know. Can you love somebody and still kill them? You know what I'm saying? Like, can you have the heart for people to know Christ and go, look, you just can't. I can't allow you to live here anymore. I can't allow you to run around killing everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want you to know Jesus, but like, I cannot. I'm taking your freedom away to continue and run around killing people.
Now, what I would prefer is to have a Jonah show up to go into a society that's full of very evil people that are cutting people's heads off and using their skulls as mugs. And you know, I mean, that was a Nineveh was a pretty evil place. You know, they didn't take the army in there. They took a preacher went in there and the whole place. Of course, that was a God thing. That was a God-inspired thing. That'd be ideal. We could just parachute preachers.
Maybe that's the right answer. We'll just find some blowhards. Let's just strap some parachutes
on them. Put some fish guts on you.
Go filibuster the entire army so that they're no longer killing
you. We'll see what the Lord has to do in here. I'm just, like, the truth is, like, there is a reality that we get to step back from and talk about that other people face.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, the question is what is the level of, is God pro self-defense? Is it, you know, like, what is the right level of, you know, does loving your neighbor extend to, you know, protecting your neighbor from physical harm as you also pray for those who persecute you? But what if he's coming after your neighbor? I think those are the things where you're trying to find the heart of what's the heart of Jesus here?
I think sometimes Jesus gives us the three commands about how to deal with enemies, and that's love, pray for, and bless them. And getting beyond that is, maybe it's just secondary. I mean, I don't want to just say it's not important, but sometimes in a day, I've only got enough time to really accomplish one thing. And here, Jesus has given us three things that we need to do for these guys. So I don't know how to get involved really on one side or the other of do we be pacifists or do we take an active self-defense role in it or not. I do know these three things that Jesus commanded us to do, and that's home territory for me. I know that much. But as far as my neighbor and self-defense and things like that, I don't see a clear black and white answer given to us. And maybe it's something that's very situational. And so I can't really point fingers on either side and say that you're doing it wrong. So with it open, maybe either option is okay, so long as you're following the other three things that Jesus told you to do, love, pray for, and bless.
And you can personally, as an individual, love, pray for, and bless while your nation is using civil discipline. routing them out.
Civil discipline.
I'd like to see that press conference. We've decided to incur civil discipline against you.
if the act was being committed against a race of people, then it'd be considered genocide. But instead, they were targeted because of their faith. So it's not technically genocide, but it's more or less the same thing that's going on. And that's something that the nations have gotten together as a UN and said, this is wrong. That genocide is morally wrong. Well, this is a religious form of it, but same sort of thing. As nations, we can intervene in each other's backyards when one nation has gotten so far out of line that they're committing genocide. I see this as a similar type of act.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, broadly speaking, it is a manner of confusion of which, like, everyone living faithfully in a kingdom of God, this is a non-distinction, right? But, like, we live in a gray area. That's where we live. We live in times of which you can have moral misguidedness that through the eyes of some are not judged as to whether you are outside of what God wants or not. Like, we're judging it's not all right to commit genocide, irrelevant to what God has said about genocide. Like, that's not where the stance is coming from. It's just we as a people, God or otherwise, believe that genocide is wrong. And so it is the clear answers exist in the kingdom of God, but we, you know, we live in a place in which that kingdom is not embraced and not lived fully. And so, like, we simply exist in a gray area. Mm-hmm. And so where things are otherwise, I think there's moral clarity within the kingdom that is muddied by the distinctions that an ungodly group of people brings with it. They bring with it problems that I don't know, cause confusion and make things difficult. And I suppose it does really make sense to say that that it is situational. To say that, like, the Holy Spirit will show you what's appropriate. Understanding that, like, although every time you see the word Jesus and sword in the same sentence, he's not advocating violence. He's speaking the movement of truth. To take the sword out of God's hands is also seems inappropriate, because he has moved through that, and that is a reality. And so, situationally, I suppose, yeah, like we're if we follow what we know we can do, and like I said, to be honest, we have a bit of a luxury here, right? Because we have the chance to talk about what could potentially do. It is simply not our situation in which we are faced with. And to be honest with you, of all the accounts that I've ever heard of Christians kind of being in those situations, they seem to have pretty morally clear ways of thinking, right? Like, you don't, and it could be there's just not documented well, right? But like all the accounts that I've read, there's just clarity with I die today or I live today and fight. And like there doesn't seem to be bits of people having this kind of conversation about the situation they're in. And maybe the luxury of being separated from it introduces the ability to talk about things that are simply the Holy Spirit's to answer. And it's not our problem. And sometimes, you know, suppose even close things, take out national stuff. Sometimes a man breaks into your house and, you know, it's yours to fight him or take one for the team and he becomes a Christian. Like, who the heck knows, right? Like, I suppose it's a Jesus deal. I suppose that's the only realistic answer we could come to here. I mean, it's these compelling arguments for either side of that thing. It's just, yeah. it seems like it's God's prerogative and you're just going to have to do what he wants.
Agreed.
That's rough times. All right. Okay. Lead like Jesus. Lead like Jesus. Lead. Yeah. So, you know, there's a we talk a lot about following Jesus. And part of following Jesus sometimes puts you in the position to lead others, either in a like a ministry situation, either in a discipleship type thing, or frankly in a secular situation, be it work group. I don't care what you do. So the question is like, what are the characteristics of Jesus as a leader? What about those are the things that make him unique in which this is not applicable, right? Because like. I hesitated to bring this up because, you know, what I have seen is like, is people take all aspects of Jesus, of how Jesus dealt with things and then try to apply it to like a corporate or a secular function. And the truth is there are some unique things about Jesus and his circumstance of which are simply not the same criteria. It is not the same thing. You know, it was your boss at work isn't likely on a specifically called mission of which, their sacrifice is imminent and they are well aware of that. It just simply isn't the circumstance, right? So there are some elements of the way Jesus has led or done things of which is inappropriate to pull those out and say this is how people act when they're leading because there's just more to his circumstance. However, broadly speaking, he is still dealing with a broad populace that acts much like we act. And the question is like, what are some aspects that you would say, like as having read scripture, that you would pull out from Jesus as the leader?
I'd say you owe it to the people that are following you to know where you're going. And I'd say Jesus certainly did that. Mm-hmm. He knew where he was going, and despite the rabble from the crowds and even his disciples be like, I don't know about this move we're making, he says, here's what we're doing. And then just keeps rolling calmly and, you know, and frankly allows them to be foolish when it's time to give them some room to be foolish for a little while and then, you know, puts them in the place when it's best for them. But, like, I don't know, he has a very, very strong, of course he's Jesus, but, like, you know, he has a very strong sense by watching the Father of what he's going to do. He knew what he was there to do, and he knew where he was going, and he knew the routes he was going to take to get there. And, like, it's almost impossible to lead people if you don't know where you're going. And so, you know, that that could probably have some well due thought to not not fight in the weeds of the day to day, making 50 decisions a day. You know the grand scheme. You know where you're going, and people will follow you when you do that with authority.
That's what I was thinking too. He's very focused and purposeful, and like you mentioned, Betty. I mean, he had a, we know what his focus was, what his ultimate purpose was. But his whole ministry, everything you read, everything he does, he wasn't like just running around, chasing wild geese. Everything was leading to that point. He was preparing the crowds, preparing the disciples, somehow laying a foundation for his ultimate command to the church, imperative to make disciples. There was very much a lot of focus in that.
He definitely had his goal in mind, but he never really sacrificed the moment in order to get there. Yeah. Like he would stop and he would address the situations that were in front of him as he was marching to Jerusalem. He would converse with people. He'd take time for what was going on around him. And it didn't mean that he got pulled into everything. I mean, he chose what he was getting involved in. But, Luke presents a gospel where Jesus is marching to Jerusalem by, like, chapter 9. He doesn't get there till chapter 19. Or so. So like a third of Luke is just Jesus making this journey to Jerusalem. He's taking his time. And for one guy who has the only excuse to have a Messiah complex, he doesn't treat people like the weight of the world is on his shoulders. He never just says, "Oh, I'm too busy for you." He never says, "I'm too busy for you." He always has time for the needs of people around him.
Right, he lives in today as he moves towards tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
and he knows his business, and he knows frankly that those day to day things are part of that,
mm-hmm.
are part of that business. Right.
Yeah. At the same time, he did escape once in a while, mm-hmm. and
yeah,
to reboot, and yeah.
Yeah, I think he knew who he was and what his mission there was, and ultimately, his authority came from God, and he has that connection with God that. Obviously he is God, but
yeah.
Even in human form, he still took time to commune with the Father, and it grounds him. It reminds him of who he is and what his authority is, and so that was never a question in his mind. He always knew where he was going, who he was, and what's going on.
He was a constant teacher. In every situation, taught every single person around him. When it comes to leading like Jesus, you have to be able to teach people. And I'm not talking about having the skills to be able to be a good facilitator. Obviously, you guys know well enough I'm going to gravitate to that. But he just taught people constantly, was investing in where they were now, and then was willing to do what he needed to do, take his time to get them to their next level, and was patient with them in their foolishness,
mm-hmm.
complete patience in their foolishness. And there was no Peter, you're an idiot kind of deal. Like there was no...
There's a bit of a get behind me, Satan, but that seems situational.
So valid point. Also on the boat, he kind of just looks at everybody like, "Hey guys, I got this. Shut up. Stop freaking out," kind of deal. But for the most part, and then the random situations, he stayed patient with the people he was trying to teach.
Yeah.
Understood where they were coming from rather than forcing them to come where he was coming from. And I think that it was so important for that to work. He had to know where they were. Rather than just have to stand in his ground in where he was. It wasn't about bridging the gap from them to him. It was him meeting them where they were and then getting them to that next level.
Yeah, I mean, the point was that they come along, right? The point was that they follow.
Mm-hmm.
And it, two basic definitions to be leaders, like you have to be going somewhere and people have to be following you.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're not going anywhere, you're not leading anybody. And frankly, if you're just walking by yourself, you're also not a leader, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so both of those things, like if you're just the guy that walked 10 feet ahead and said, "Now people will come to me," like that's not leading.
Mm-hmm.
That's standing and hoping a crowd forms.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most embarrassing flash mob ever. And the second part of it, like if you have a bunch of people around you, you're not going anywhere, then you just found, like you created a flash mob that actually doesn't do anything. And so, I think there is like the combination of those things, to actually grabbing people and having them come with you as opposed to you saying, "I'm going, I hope you come along." Now, it's not that he didn't have aspects of that. He met them where they were and presented with an honest proposition, and sometimes it involved him walking pretty lonely, right? Because like people turned around and left and said, we hear what you're offering. We're not interested. And it doesn't change what it is that you have to do in life. Like his deal was his deal, and his business was going to continue whether people were coming or not. But the truth was is that he wanted people to come, and so as he went on his business, he knew that it was successful as he kind of grafted other people in. And so it's keeping all those things kind of continuously moving, as opposed to like elevating one or the other and saying it's important that that I continue moving forward as a leader, and then people will come around. I mean, they do, but like you have to help them come around. Like leadership isn't the guy having the right idea or the right answer. Jesus implicitly always had the right answer. That's how it works with Jesus. But like he has to help people see that. Like there's still some think of the discussion he has. This is in John with the Jews, right? Like he's providing trying to get them to understand. Like Moses was pointing to me. He could have just said, "I'm right, you're wrong. Dig the miracles. You stink. I'm out." Right. But he's actually trying to help them and say, I'm trying to help you understand what this is coming from. Like, if you want to honor God, this is what all this was pointing to. Know me, see me for what I am. And he could have just said, I'm right. You stink. I'm leaving. And so, right. You see aspects of that where you can't just tell them the right answer, even if it's right. Like you have to help leading people is actually leading them, helping them understand it. Helping them see what it does to their lives and the impact that it has on them and what it means. So I think that teacher thing is a very strong thing to think. Like Jesus, just because he had the right ideas, he didn't bail on actually helping people see it. You have to have a love for the people around you to understand what it is that you're talking about so that you may come along. And I was like, I've been there. I've been there. I've gotten frustrated where I'm like, actually more happens for my kids where I'm like, I'm just right. I'm just right and you're just wrong. And we're just going to do what I want to do. And the truth is that like, it's my job to help them understand why there's a difference, why that what they think about is not in their best interest, and why what I'm talking about works. Like it's just part of my gig. And when we bail on that type of thing, we're not actually leading. We're just grandstanding against people who don't know any different. And like, what kind of victory is that? That's a lame victory. So yeah, I would say that's strongly compelling of Jesus as leader.
He also had a perspective of what happens after he's gone, after he's out of the picture. He was taking time to invest in Peter and in the others and train them up, because at some point he's going to ascend back to heaven, and then you've got 11 guys at that point kind of looking around like, all right, what do we do next? Well, they're going to get anointed with the Holy Spirit, but they're going to be following the example of what Jesus just taught them. He's leaving behind a legacy and knows that, I've got a certain amount of time. So in the process of training up people, it's not just training up to have better subordinates, but he's training to replace himself. Yep. And then he even makes the comment, you guys are going to do greater things than I even did, which is just phenomenal. I would love to have a leader who has that kind of perspective of the people that he's investing in or that she's investing in, that those people are going to do greater things than I could ever do. Jesus had that perspective of his disciples. And if there was anyone who would be an exception to that rule, I would think it would be Jesus, but he seemed to have that.
Yeah. Which I suppose also touches on the thought of Jesus as a servant leader, right? Mm-hmm. Like that he serves those that he was actually trying to lead, which is a very awkward predicament for some of those people, both culturally and I just the basic nature of people that are above you attempting to serve you. But because they're trying to lead you, they're trying to lead you to that. Yeah. And it is to recognize that kind of thing. And so, I think if we miss that, like we try to protect the thought process of what it is to lead, to rise above, but it's not like the what it is to lead is to get people to where you want them to be, and those means are necessary. Where like if you want people to know how to serve, you serve to demonstrate, and you've gotten them there. And so Jesus could have think of the example when they came to arrest him. He's like, I could have called angels. Like I could I have the authority. I have the ability. I could have just called them down, wiped the place out. But that is not how I want things accomplished. That's not how it's going to get done. Mm-hmm. And through his example, he presented that. And that's how he led, through his whole interaction on earth. And so, sometimes I think we spend a lot of time on Jesus's words and we parse them too thick outside of his actions, and what did he actually do? What did he do? How did he? If he said this thing and then did this thing, I have to understand them both, that they fit together. How can I understand that? As opposed to I rally towards what he did or I rally towards what he said because it fits my personality and how I want to lead things. And that becomes dangerous, trying to parse out, like, he's effective because he's the complete package and ultimately he's Jesus, not because he took a couple of his sayings as pithy wisdom, put it on his office, and then rocked out on those particular principles. It was all those things come together. There was a balance to that. To that nature of him. So,
I also see that I guess it's part of the servant leadership style, but he always did the heavy lifting. But he also called the disciples to likewise do.
Oh, yeah.
He was the first to sacrifice, but he would train the guys to sacrifice as well. And so they were ready when it was their time. And he would give them the opportunity to step into that role of doing the heavy lifting, doing the sacrificing. It was not a place of comfort, and it was not at all the cushy seats that most people would really like from a leadership type of role.
Yeah.
To lead like Jesus is not a comfortable thing. I don't know why you would really desire it from that perspective. That'd be foolish. But yeah.
Okay. I don't know. Any closing thoughts on that, fellas? I just thought, like, I don't know, that benefits me personally, to be honest with you. Like, just to kind of think through, I think I know I can corporate style, I feel like I can lead like Jesus. I mean, like, I know the things to say and potentially the right infrastructure to keep in place, right? But that is not even half a story. That's a quarter of a story. And so if I'm to lead like Jesus in whatever aspect of my life, be it my family, be it my job, be it ministry, whatever, can I contemplate what that actually means, not for people? Because when you say, like, what does Jesus as a leader look like, a lot of times we want to see, well, what does that mean to the people below it? But the question is, like, me personally, as if you're called to be a leader in any aspect as a Christian, how is that defined by what Jesus does?
I thought it was pretty key as well that even as the Son of God, God in the flesh, before making big decisions, he went to the Father.
Yeah.
You know, there was prayer involved, and, you know, he didn't just choose random 12 disciples. He was like, he spent time in prayer ahead of time. So, okay, there's all these guys hanging out. Which are the 12?
Yeah.
You know, who's it going to be? And I think that's extremely important in leadership of making sure you know who the head is.
Yeah. 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 No doubt. All right. Well, I feel like I got stuff to change about my life. I don't know about you, fella. Buva, do you feel like you have to change your life?
Of course I do.
Classic. Good job, Buva.
Well, so I kind of just take that stand in pretty much my entire life.
This seems appropriate.
The moment that I decide that, you know, I think I've got it right, and it doesn't seem like there's really going to be anything that I need to change my life on, is a problem.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree. All right, you've listened live from The Path. We're coming to you from on 99.3 FM, The Truth Network, and I want to thank you for hanging out with us. Hey, if you could do us a big favor, contact Bob Eisenlauer with the Eisenlauer team or Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Utilize their services because it makes us happy. And if nothing else, shoot them an email, give them a phone call, stand outside their windows at all hours of the night and say, hey, thanks for sponsoring Live from the Path because we enjoy the program. Also, if you're with us on the podcast, we'll be right back with you. Just give us a couple minutes. Thank you for listening to Live from the Path. What's that?
That's a heavy one. It's a heavy show. Heavy show.
Just trying to catch up from last week.
Dang. Last week was a melee of party hats and roosters. Today, heavy.
It was an iffy. All right, what do you got for some advice, Mike?
Here we go. Dear Life from the Path, my husband has many wonderful qualities. However, he's obsessed with my always being instantly available when he calls or texts my cell phone. I don't carry it with me every minute of the day. At work, I can be busy taking orders, dealing with clients, having a conference with my boss, or using the bathroom. But if I don't answer, my husband leaves nasty messages asking why I have a phone if I'm not going to pick up or respond to a text. I always do it as soon as I am able. I have explained the reality of what I might be involved with when he contacts me. I have told him his demand that I always be immediately available is selfish, to no avail. What's your opinion?
Oh, that it wasn't even advice. That was just like, what's your opinion?
Yeah, what do you think of that?
I think your husband is overacting.
Yeah, I think your husband sounds like a schmuck.
Yeah, he's selfish.
I'm a little bit of this guy. If I'm being
a little bit of it is understandable, but being this guy is not. Like, Yeah, you can reasonably expect that hopefully your wife is going to get in contact with you as soon as possible, and you contact her or call her or text her for a reason, and yeah, you'd like a response. But to take this just vindictive, ridiculous response is messed up.
Yeah, that's not me. I instantly worry something's happened. And I'm not sure what part of
I don't think that's what this guy is. This guy sounds like,
he's kind
hey,
of a jerk.
Wife creature, why have you not responded to me within 10 seconds? I'm angry at you and I'm now contemplating shutting off
your phone. Yeah, I am husband, hear me text.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe he only reacts in one way, you know, like he's actually worried. But he reacts in anger.
He can't express it correctly.
Yeah.
I think he's a jerk.
Then he needs to communicate better and tell his wife that. She won't be so upset.
If people stayed married without that cell phone, I'd say tell him you're just not going to carry it with you anymore. See what happens.
Yeah, so either I can answer all your texts or none of them. I'm going with none. I'm leaving the phone at home.
Yeah.
Can you just shoot him a quick, okay, that's it. Just, I got your message type of thing. Quick.
She's in the bathroom.
Acknowledge.
She's in the bathroom, Dave.
Taking a poop, Dave.
Those are my best texting
times. You
don't
have your phone with you? All right.
Or a conference with your boss.
Actually, I always grab my phone on the way to the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's an excellent time to catch up on Facebook.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. Here's what I'm going to tell you about. I work in a corporate environment, and there's a distinct difference between sales guys and people that do like operational work as to their level of comfort speaking in the toilet. like the operation guys tend to keep to themselves. They don't not a lot of gland head, and sales guys do not stop their personality in the toilet. Like they'll be talking, like a guy will be on the toilet. Hey man, what's happening? Oh no, I heard you in Arizona last week. Yeah, sure was. like full on, as if there's not guys not on the toilet. And I don't know why, I just had this thought that maybe there was a difference, but it is distinct, my experience over the last 3 months between these types of fellas. And some of them talk about some pretty sensitive talk. It's like, hey, man, heard your mom was in the hospital. Yeah, she's doing much better now. I'm like, you were on the job. like maybe let's not talk about that in here. So anyway, just something to keep in mind.
So, yeah, I'm just thinking a quick acknowledgement is probably all that guy's really looking for. I don't think he needs a book or something written back to him.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to solve his issues with a... I mean, you really want to bolt up against him? You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe you just have some grace for his neurotic personality and just be like, got it.
Yeah.
What if he's outraged? I mean, like, what if he's outraged like 15 times a day?
Got it.
Can you say, is it disingenuous to set up an auto reply?
Yeah, you could do that.
Hey. Gotcha, man.
There you go.
You could just have it to auto reply, I saw your text. Then you don't really feel any way about it.
That's kind of a lie, then.
Here's your text.
Your text was received.
You teach the husband to do Facebook Messenger and that alone, because that will automatically alert the person that you've read the text and read the message. So real quick.
When they've read it, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Real quick. You see it? Okay. They're alive. All right. Bye.
That's solid.
Yeah. All right. Here's Secular's advice. My opinion is you should ignore your husband's nasty comments because he's acting like an immature, demanding child who needs to grow up and realize the world doesn't revolve around him. Nah.
Was the word ignore used?
No.
You need to ignore your husband?
Oh, yeah. Ignore your husband's nasty
comments. Like that's the wrong response to someone being childish and demanding, just ignoring it.
That's, I don't know.
Yeah, that's cool.
Sometimes.
That solves the children's problem. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Child is going to sit there and be demanding and ridiculous and childish. You're not going to just go, well, looks like I'm not responding to that one.
Yeah. That kid's been violent with animals. Yeah, don't worry. He'll murder it out.
Hopefully that thing sorts out. That's awful advice.
We got one more. Yeah, go ahead.
Dear Life from the Path, my husband has a grandson, Kyle, in quotes, who has been living with us for 2 years while he earned his bachelor's degree in college. However, he is now going for a master's, and it will be another 2 years before he graduates. Kyle works a lot and takes classes, so he's not at our home that much. However, at age 25, it seems to me he should be out on his own. Some of Kyle's uncles are upset that my husband has allowed this to go on so long because their kids never got the same treatment. But Kyle doesn't get the support from his parents that he should, and my husband feels sorry for him. Am I selfish for feeling that my space has been invaded for too long? Yeah.
Yeah,
wait. Yeah, you are.
Yeah. So the kid's still in school?
Yeah.
Yeah, what?
He's getting
like
his master's.
Stepmom, I'm guessing.
Here's the deal, and like I fall under the same category. I have a, you know, when you grow up in America, you get this idealized version of what your life is supposed to look like, right? Like, you're going to have you and the wife and two kids living at your place, and that's going to be the deal until you retire, and then you get a motorhome and toot around the nations, stopping at random RV parks or whatever. And the truth of the matter is like, you know, what if your mom's get sick or your dad's got to come live with you or, you know, or your brother dies and you got to take the kids or whatever. Like, you're gonna let a terrible thing that's befallen somebody else now be the worst thing that's ever happened to you? You've basically taken what Ben has described last week as something that wasn't true, acted as if it was true, and then mourned the loss of it. The truth of the matter is that you have no idea what this life bears of in for the people around you or yourself or your family. And you've set up an idealistic version of yourself, which frankly maybe doesn't produce the most joy in your life. You know what I'm saying? Who's to say that another person living at your place, there can't be joy in your life there? Why that instantly a terrible thing? Yeah, right. I think you're I think you're missing the joy of having someone living at your place.
Mm-hmm. And he's not even there that much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he'll be, those two years go by, it flies.
It's not a big deal.
And he'll be gone the rest of your life. You can say, yep, we helped you out.
Yeah, yeah. It's completely a perspective thing, right? Like if you approach it as something that's been taken away from you, yeah, there's no way to rectify that. You're just going to be upset about it, right? But if the circumstances you did not ask for, that you were given, that you have the opportunity to see some you know, pretty cool experiences, you get to know a person, be close to them, whatever. Yeah, you just have to change your perspective on this thing.
Yeah, it's a blessing. Yeah. It's a blessing. Secular says that you and your husband have chosen to be generous with Kyle should be nobody else's business. Tell them catty uncles to go else. Mm-hmm. For the reason you mentioned, Kyle needed a break. Your husband stepped in and has seen that he got one. If Kyle were constantly underfoot, I can understand why you might justifiably feel invaded. However, because he isn't, then yes, I do think your attitude is selfish.
Solid.
All right. Secular takes a swing and knocks one out of the park.
All right. Hey, you've been listening live from the Path. Thanks so much for hanging out with us this week. We very much appreciate it. If you want to contact us during the week, you can shoot us an email, info@lifefromthepath.org. Check out the website, past clips of the show, including clips from today and clips from other very, very cool artists, including Matt Baird, who was in the studio recently. He's got an album coming out both on his own and with Spoken. So that should be very cool, and you can check out his clips from Life from the Path out on the website. Until then, be faithful and mean. God will handle the ends. Have a wonderful week.